Hey everyone, Jillian here. The following episode you're going to hear is a Court Junkie bonus episode, one of many that I am now going to be offering on Patreon starting immediately. Bonus episodes will be shorter but still very detailed cases that have interesting legal angles or outcomes. I'm really excited about these because I might also choose cases that are ongoing and maybe haven't completely moved through the system yet. Each month, I'm going to release a bonus episode for anyone who donates $6 a month on Patreon. This is episode one, and episode two is already up there, so you'll have something to listen to as soon as you sign up. If you're interested, just go to courtjunkie.com/support, where you'll be redirected to my Patreon page. Choose the $6 tier, and then you'll have access to these bonus episodes and ad-free regular Court Junkie episodes. That's courtjunkie.com/support. And now, here's episode one. On the night of December 7th, 2012, residents in rural Elvin, Texas, heard the metal-on-metal sound of a car wreck. Then, about 5 minutes later, they heard a single gunshot. When police arrived on the scene, they found 12-year-old David Barajas Jr. dead in a ditch, and his 11-year-old brother Caleb was in bad shape. The two Barajas boys had been helping their father push home the family truck, which had run out of gas, when they were struck from behind by a car driven by 20-year-old Jose Banda. But David Jr. and Caleb weren't the only ones that police would find at the scene, either deceased or barely clinging to life. They also found the body of Jose Banda, still inside his car, a single gunshot wound to the head. Somebody had murdered him. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, bonus episode one. According to reports, David and Cindy Barajas married young, and in the year 2000, welcomed their first child, David Barajas Jr. By David Jr.'s first birthday, Cindy was pregnant again with another son, whom they named Caleb. A few years after that, they had a daughter, and then 8 years later, another son. On Friday, December 7th, 2012, all six members of the Barajas family were out for a late dinner. David Sr. was driving the family's pickup truck home around 11:30 p.m. when they ran out of gas on a narrow, dark, rural road just 100 yards away from their home. David and the oldest two children, 12-year-old David Jr. and 11-year-old Caleb, got out of the truck to push the short distance home. Cindy slid over to the driver's seat to steer, with her 8-year-old daughter and 3-month-old son in the back seat. Shortly after David and the boys began to push, Cindy felt a sharp jolt as the truck was pushed forward a few hundred feet. Getting out of the truck quickly, she saw her son Caleb lying on the side of the road. One of his legs was severed. Another mangled car was stopped in the road nearby. David and David Jr. had been thrown into a ditch when the other car crashed into their truck. When David crawled out of the ditch, he couldn't see his sons, but could hear his wife's screams. He eventually made it over to Caleb, who was calling out for his parents. Though missing his leg, he was conscious. David then found David Jr., who was not breathing. He began to perform CPR until police arrived on the scene. Now, everything I just told you is what David told investigators when he made a formal statement. David claimed much of what happened during and after the accident was a blur. He had been transported from the scene in an ambulance when he began complaining of chest pain and passed out. It was later determined he was having a panic attack. He woke up in a hospital, only remembering having tried to save his sons. Two witnesses to the crash, both teen boys, had a slightly different story. They claimed that when they arrived on the scene, they saw David arguing with the occupant of the other car. Then David told the teens to call 911 before disappearing for about 3 minutes. The teens called 911 at 11:33 p.m. The teen caller told the dispatcher that there was a wreck and told her to send an ambulance because a kid had gotten run over. Then, 2 minutes later, a a gunshot was heard on the 911 recording, and the teen yelled, "There was a gunshot." 2 minutes after the gunshot, at 11:37 p.m., the first police officer arrived on the scene. Cindy Barajas was seen on dash cam footage, on her knees near Caleb, shouting for help. David was performing CPR. After officers had cleared the scene for the paramedics, Caleb was rushed to the hospital, while David Jr. was declared dead right then and there. When an officer approached the second car, a Chevy Malibu, he saw the driver sitting slumped in his seat with a single gunshot wound to the head. Jose Banda, the 20-year-old driver of the car, was then transported to the hospital. While most media reports say that Jose was found in the driver's seat, in an interview with the Mad Hatter radio show in Houston, Jose's brother said he was actually found in the back seat. Both Jose Banda and Caleb Barajas later died from their injuries. Tests would show that Jose's blood alcohol level was 0.175, nearly twice the legal limit. Had Jose survived, he could have faced serious legal consequences for drunk driving and causing a crash that killed two children. But Jose didn't survive. Someone had decided, apparently at the crash scene, to execute him. On December 12, 2012, David Jr. and Caleb were laid to rest. Buried with them were the Christmas gifts their parents intended to give them that year. As the Barajas family faced the immense heartache of burying two sons side by side, they knew the man who was responsible for their loved ones' deaths. But the family of Jose Banda, which included a 5-month-old daughter, didn't have that same knowledge. Accusations began flying, largely on social media, accusing David Barajas Sr. of shooting Jose. Accusations also pointed at other members of the Barajas family, including Cindy, David's brother, who was not even there that night, and David's father, who arrived on the scene long after police did. Rumors that David had fled the area and was hiding out in another state began to spread. For the Banda family, it was reportedly hard to understand why no one had been arrested yet. In their view, there were only a few people at the scene who could have carried this out. While the two families were grieving and arguing on social media, the state had gathered their evidence to present to a grand jury. In February of 2013, 2 months after the crash, a Brazoria County grand jury indicted David Barajas Sr. on a murder charge for the shooting death of Jose Banda. According to authorities, they had witnesses who saw David leave the crash scene and head in the direction of his home. Moments later, he returned to the scene and walked to Jose Banda's car. While the witnesses did not witness the shooting itself, investigators believed their statements implicated David in the murder. David, however, maintained his innocence. If convicted, he faced a life sentence. When the trial for Jose's murder began on August 19, 2014, legal analysts watching the case speculated that it was going to be an uphill battle for the state. While witnesses saw David leave the scene and then come back, no one saw him shoot Jose. Gunshot residue tests on David's hands were negative. No one was able to put the gun in David's hand. In addition to the lack of direct evidence, there was also the emotional factor, which always needs to be taken into account when dealing with a jury. Even if David did kill Jose in the heat of the moment, some jurors might think, who could blame him after David lost his sons? On the morning of the first day of trial, more than 40 Barajas family members took their seats in the courtroom, wearing blue and white buttons with a photo of David Jr. and Caleb. Below the photo, it read, "Forever in our hearts, David and Caleb Barajas." Some members of the Barajas family were asked to leave the courtroom to make room for Jose's family. The judge, District Judge Terry Holder, then asked the remaining Barajas family members to remove the pins they wore. She acknowledged that this was a particularly difficult case for everyone, since both sides lost loved ones that night. But she did not want the images of the boys to unfairly influence the jury. A life-size cardboard cutout of the boys was also not allowed in the courtroom. Brazoria County District Attorney Brian Harack told the jury in his opening statement that Jose Banda made a horrible decision by drinking and driving, but that he did not deserve a public execution. He then pointed out the evidence the jury would hear. While no murder weapon was ever found, an open box of ammunition found during a search of the Barajas home matched a fragment found at the crime scene. He told the jury that they would hear from witnesses who saw David leave the scene and later return, walking up to Jose's car. Forensic evidence would show some of David's blood in Jose's car, both on the armrest and the dashboard, directly contradicting David's original statement that he spent the entire time at the crash scene trying to save his sons. Additionally, the Barajas' home security system cameras had been disabled. The hard drive that would have recorded David returning home at any point that night was missing. Harack then asked the jury to remember that emotion cannot be what determines innocence or guilt. David's defense attorney, Sam Kamek, told the jury in his opening that David was innocent. David had remained at the crash site the entire time, and when police arrived, they saw him covered in his son's blood as he tried to save them. He told the jury that the state's timeline was impossible and that there was no way David left his dying sons to go get a gun, murder Jose, and only then tried to save his sons. He also told jurors that investigators had tunnel vision in this case and failed to pursue other viable suspects who were seen fleeing the crash site. The state's case largely focused on circumstantial evidence and witness statements, while the defense's case was largely built during the cross-examination of investigators and witnesses. One of the officers testified that a search of the Barajas' mobile home the day after the crash led to the discovery of a gun holster and .357 caliber ammunition. The .357 ammunition was the same caliber as the bullet fragment at the scene. On cross-examination, the defense pointed out that the fragment at the scene could have come from a .35 or even a 9mm, and that the holster was the wrong size for the type of gun they thought was the murder weapon. When two of the first officers on the scene testified, Kamek asked them about reports of additional gunshots that were heard that night after police arrived on the scene. Neither officer had included those in their report, though it clearly showed that somebody else was firing a weapon that night. These shots were fired long after David had been transported to the hospital, but were not investigated as being possibly linked to Jose's murder. Lead investigator, Dominic Sanders, admitted on cross-examination that he had no direct evidence that David murdered Jose. Kamek shot back, "What in the heck are we doing here?" As for the blood found in Jose's car, a forensic scientist testified that blood matching David was found on the armrest and the dashboard. On cross-examination, the expert conceded that additional blood samples tested in the car were from an unknown source. The two teenage witnesses, William Duncan and Landon Lane, both testified that they were driving together when David Barajas flagged them down. When they stopped, David told them to call the police because his kid had been hit. He followed it up by saying, "Make sure they don't leave," which William and Landon assumed meant the people in the other car. William and Landon stood between the truck and the car while Landon called 911. They testified that after David flagged them down, they didn't see him for around 3 minutes. They next saw him walking up to Jose Banda's car, though they did not see a gun. Another witness at the scene was Tammy Archuleta, who happened to work at the school cafeteria where David Jr. and Caleb attended. She saw a man that night who she described as angry, but she could not definitively identify him as David Sr., and her back was to the crash when she heard the gunshot. Other key witnesses for the prosecution were the men who were with Jose on the night of the crash. One was Gerardo Tellez, Jose's cousin, and the other was Antonio Rodriguez, Jose's half-brother. Both testified that they were out drinking with Jose that night and that Jose was drunk when he got behind the wheel of the car. Gerardo drove his own car behind Jose, and Antonio was in the car with Gerardo. They both witnessed Jose hit the Barajas' truck. After the crash, Gerardo testified that he saw David go over to Jose's car, reach through the open window, and start punching Jose. There was some sort of confrontation between Gerardo, Antonio, and David. Gerardo and Antonio then fled the scene, with Gerardo saying that the scene was horrific. Neither Gerardo nor Antonio came forward to make statements to the police until days after the accident, claiming they were in shock. On his cross-examination of Gerardo, Kamek produced a crime scene photograph that clearly showed that Jose's driver's window was rolled up and not shattered, making it impossible for David to have punched Jose through the window, as Gerardo claimed. When pushed on this inconsistency, Gerardo stuck with his story of what he said he saw. The prosecution rested and the defense decided not to call David Barajas to testify. On August 26, 2014, each side had their chance to make their final statement to the jury before deliberations would begin. The defense first focused their closing on cutting down the prosecution's most compelling evidence, the ammunition found in the house, and David's blood in Jose's car. Kamek reminded the jury that the bullet found at the scene was a fragment, and it could not be determined with 100% accuracy what the caliber was. As for the blood, Kamek said that the blood found in Jose's car could have come from the scuffle between David and the other men at the scene, Jose's cousin and half-brother. In fact, he said Jose's relatives had fled the scene and didn't come forward for days, making them just as viable as suspects as David was. The defense's final point was the implausibility of the timeline. From the time of the first 911 call until the police arrived was just 4 minutes. The gunshot was heard almost exactly at the midway point. For David to have killed Jose, he would have had to run the 100 yards to his house, get his gun, run back to the scene, and shoot Jose, all in 2 minutes. In the next 2 minutes, he would have had to hide the gun so well that the police search couldn't find it, wash his hands, and then kneel down in the road to start CPR before the police arrived. Kamek told the jury this would have been impossible. The prosecution's closing arguments went over the evidence and then attempted to plead against an emotion-driven verdict. The DA reiterated what he said in the opening statement. Jose Banda made a terrible choice that night, but he was the father of a baby girl who deserved to have her father around. Execution was not a penalty for drunk driving, and therefore David Barajas didn't have the right to carry that out, no matter what Jose had done. The jury deliberated for 6 hours before returning a verdict on August 27, 2014. They found 32-year-old David Barajas Sr. not guilty in the murder of Jose Banda. David cried as the verdict was read and immediately turned and hugged his wife, Cindy. Jose's family first sat in shock, and then some began to sob. Outside the courtroom, David made a statement to reporters.
I give all the honor and glory to God. I'm just I'm thankful that he's given me the strength to proceed and keep going. And it's been really hard. It's been really, really hard.
He said he was happy with the verdict, that he could move on with his life, that it was closure for him and his family. He went on to say that this was a loss for everyone. He lost his 2 sons, and the Banda family had also lost their son. There was no winning in this case, he said. The district attorney also made a statement.
We believe that Mr. Barajas committed this crime, and we also know that the jury did not believe that beyond a reasonable doubt. We respect that.
With authorities seemingly confident that they had tried the right man, there does not appear to be any further investigation into Jose's murder. The case remains officially unsolved. As always, I'd love to know what you think. Did David Barajas Sr. get away with the heat-of-the-moment murder? Or was somebody else responsible for the death of Jose Banda? Did you agree with the jury's verdict? Let me know by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com, by tweeting me at courtjunkiepod, or commenting on Instagram at courtjunkie. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.